Welcome to The Inner Game. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. Thanks for listening. The inner game is the relationship we have to our authentic purpose and contribution in life. It's about the ways that we grow personally and spiritually on the inside that affects everything on the outside of our lives. The quality of our inner game is becoming increasingly important because we now know that our quantum world shifts to reflect whatever is inside us. Each of our contributions is critical to the quality of what is possible for us all on the planet. So these are conversations with people who are up to something evolutionary in their lives and an opportunity to hear about how these people take on their spiritual and personal growth and how that strengthens the contributions they are making in the world. Our guest today is Lisa DiNardo, who is a horticulturist and certified arborist specializing in creating and caring for public landscapes. So these are pieces of public land that allow people to interact with and be healed by the natural world. Thank you so much for joining me today, Lisa.
You're welcome. Pleasure to be here.
Before I ask you what happened when you started working with trees, tell us what an arboretum is.
Well, an arboretum, if you break that word down, arbor means tree. And different arboretums have different tree collections, if you will. So an arboretum is a collection of trees, different species, conifer, deciduous. But not only trees, they've got gardens. So it really varies. It depends on the arboretum.
So when you started working with trees at nurseries after high school, did you notice at that point that you had a special interest and passion there?
You know, I noticed that when I was a teenager. My father and grandfather were growers, just in the landscape. My grandfather was an Italian immigrant. So I was kind of raised in that atmosphere. And my father had gardens all around. And when I was in, you know, just in the garden, I asked my dad if I can, you know, and have a patch over here and over there. And he said, of course. And then I just noticed more than just I was good at something, there was an energetic connection to it that was beyond my mind. And that was really amazing. And beyond that, just certain dreams I would have with trees. So it was something that I feel like is within. I came into this world with that.
And you've said that over the years, you have developed a way of listening to the land and to trees for the guidance that's there.
Yeah, I feel like I've matured. I feel like in my growing, I mean, yes, one can have a working knowledge and understanding of trees, the biology and whatnot, but it's being on a landscape and not being in your head, but listening first. I enjoy that. I enjoy walking on the landscape, not being mentally driven, and having the capability to assess, but I like to get my first perceptions first. And then, yeah, just as I grow, it's a dynamic interchange that it's beautiful. It's just love to put my hands on trees.
And you've also shared that there's something about creating space for that to happen for others.
Yes.
Who might not even know that they, you know, want a connection to the land or would benefit from a connection to the land, but you've seen it happen in the public spaces that you've maintained.
Yes. My employment at Haverford College from 1992 to 97, it was really at Haverford, working as a horticulturist at the Arboretum, that I really understood that my passion was for public horticulture. And that was a historic landscape as well. 130-year-old trees that are 150, 60, 70-year-olds now. Yeah, that was a dynamic understanding. And in contrast to like a residential landscape. Yeah, it's, you know, yes, one can consult on a residential landscape, but my passion somehow is in the public landscape.
What did you see happen for people?
You know, working for the town of Basalt for 13 and a half years, you know, I'd be about my day working in one of the various gardens or trees. And every day, it seems like it was almost every day, where someone was saying, thank you so much for making our town beautiful. And that was amazing because really it was, for me, working, my background in public horticulture has been on a campus or a public garden. it was new to me to be at a municipality, but I found that I love that. Mm-hmm. Just that association, that connection. I was like, wow, that is so cool. And I just love what I'm doing, you know, designing sustainable landscapes. But, and I wasn't taking too much thought that, you know, the beauty of it, that it's just my natural dynamic to create that, my love and my passion. But people were responding to that.
Would you see people come back to the same places? Did you see sort of regulars at different places?
I would see people taking photos. Mm. And then I gave garden tours, which was fun. So that was exciting. And it was through the garden tours that you really got to describe, you know, what was growing, the water-wise, whether it was native or adapted. And really, it starts from the soil up. So it's just creating that dynamic landscape. And people, you know, as humans, I think we do that. We just naturally gravitate towards beauty. And one, you can tell when something is being maintained well and really holistically. It just gives off that vibe, I think.
Have you seen a change in consciousness around the maintenance of public lands since the beginning of your career?
Yes.
Have there been shifts? Tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. I think I'm pretty like going on 34 or 35 years, and I think there's more consciousness in regards to irrigation, how we irrigate, and trying to be cognizant of we don't need to water every day, right? The soil needs to breathe. So in between soils, healthy soils, and really, yeah, like with permaculture, there's a dynamic understanding of this, you know, the symbiosis from the ground cover to the tree and how they work together. And to me, it does. It starts at the soil and it works its way up. So there is, absolutely, I think there's much more understanding and practice of picking the right plant for the right place in the design, making sure that they're all, you know, drought tolerant. You know, mixing water loving plants with a xeric plant is going to stress somebody out, right? So it needs to be balanced like that. But there is definitely a consciousness shift with how we work with the land, how we approach the land, the sustainability with that. But yes, there's absolutely been a I'd say a great turning, if you will.
What about in the consciousness around edible landscapes and medicinal and, you know, our local food system?
Yes. Well, I know for me personally, that has changed greatly. You know, I can't say that every horticulturist, gardener, arborist has that affinity, but I certainly do. And it just really started with the food forest garden in Basalt.
Tell us how that came to be.
Yeah. Well, I was on
a beautiful public project.
Yeah. I was on National Public Radio on their website. So, yeah, I was scrolling through, and then there was an article on the Basalt Seed Garden. And I thought, wow, what is that? And so I immediately called the library and said, how can I get seeds? And through that, I met Stephanie Sison. And we became...
Who was managing things up at Colorado Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute at
correct.
That time.
At
and
Kirby.
Had started the seed saving at the library.
That's right. Yep. And so just, you know, meeting with Stephanie and really understanding what the seed garden was about. We met a couple times, and her greatest wish was she needed some land. So I, you know, had a meeting with the town manager and said, these are some ideas that were floating around. And so I thought of some ideas and some potential public spaces that were not being utilized. And so we found a garden. We found a blank, kind of neglected site.
And do you remember how you messaged sort of what was in it for the town out of this? You know, how did you make the case?
I guess because, you know, working for the town for at least 12 years then, they saw my work. And they saw my dedication and my commitment to making a public space that was pretty much neglected. And it was an eyesore on a main route. And so Steph and I came up with, you know, a basic plan, design, you know, rudimentary, but to get it going. And yeah, just basically said that we wanted to get a Seed Savers going to contribute and to collaborate with the library, the Seed Saving Library. And from then on, it was just kind of a dynamic process where, you know, Steph can grow all that, you know, to grow the vegetables, let them go to seed, collect them, and then you literally could walk it over to the library. It was that close to the library.
And what a great educational opportunity, too.
Yeah.
I know that there's been a lot of schools that have interacted with the garden.
Absolutely. Outside groups come in. Yes, Stephanie brings a lot of different school groups in and others. The landscape is maturing, and it's so beautiful to watch it mature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you still interact with that piece of land now that you're not with Basalt?
My view of the office, my office currently, is of the garden. And it's so beautiful to watch everything maturing, especially the fruit trees that went in. And to see the dynamic growth and the change in the garden, from the fence, everything. And Steph is doing just a beautiful job and all her supporters.
Well, I just want to take a minute to say this is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to Inner Game on KDNK. My guest today is Lisa DiNardo, and we're talking about the real value in our lives of interacting with pieces of land around us and taking care of them. We were talking a little bit about how the community that is a landscape has a lot to teach us about community health.
Yeah.
And I'd love to hear you say a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Let's talk about garden health first. Mm-hmm. So when the garden is healthy, meaning when the garden is healthy, so that means that, you know, there's trees, there's shrubs, there's a dynamic living system. Everything's being managed in a kind of holistic way. Not too much irrigation, right? Adequate water. Anything that feeds a system. You know, there's various types of mulch you can use. Right plant, right place. So again, different landscapes have different designs. Really depends on the site, fuel exposure. But to have a healthy landscape, when there's healthy landscapes, I think there's pretty much healthy communities, because that's a resource that needs to be managed. And if a community is managing their land, I think there's vitality there, and that's expressed through, you know, the willingness to be, to have beauty in the landscape as well.
You said something about when you first go on to a piece of land, you like to defer to what wants to happen there.
Yeah.
And that sparked something for me about, you know, the way I've approached community organizing over the years is to first really understand what's in place and the different inputs and people that are leaders and that have put their energy into different things and to really listen for what are the opportunities here?
Yeah.
What wants to happen?
Yeah.
You know, what would health look like given what's here?
Absolutely.
And I wonder if you, you know, kind of think about that when you're interacting with the land.
Yeah. I want to say it's second nature to me to walk upon a landscape. And immediately what I feel is basically maybe the energy of the landscape. And, you know, I take that in. And if there is a directive of or a purpose or a function that wants to happen with that land, and I understand that directive, immediately, you know, trees come into my mind. And of course, this is all, how shall I say, ecologically suitable, sustainable for that site.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's just to be cognizant of what's existing. And looking at the soil, you can tell degraded soils and non-degraded soils. So really, it really depends on the purpose of that site and what the intention is. And from there, you know, it's like being before a buffet. You can pick anything, right? And that's what it's like. You get the compatible plants, right? You create that landscape. You know, you don't want to block any views. So there are certain, you know, guideposts and signs that one needs to follow. But I love that. When I see blank lots, yeah, I think I've just, you know, really had to re-veg that site.
Mm-hmm.
That would really benefit, even if it's temporary, right? You don't necessarily have to put long-lived trees in,
mm-hmm.
but it's easy to re-veg a site with not a lot of cost
mm-hmm.
and a lot of benefit
right.
to the community to green it up.
I want to ask you something about what you envision for the future in terms of, you know, how municipalities would view the value of their community-held lands,
mm-hmm.
how those might be more beneficial given the future
mm-hmm.
coming at us that we're aware of.
Yeah.
What do you think? What's something that you hope for?
You know, I think when one travels, you know, even regionally, and you come to a landscape that's well-maintained, you know that. You can see that. There is, like, value in that. And so there's major resources contributing to that. And that could be either a volunteer aspect or it could be staff. So my experience, you know, specifically working in municipal horticulture has been, it usually is staff directed. Yes, there are, how shall I say, you know, individuals, community individuals that want to support certain projects, and they do. But I find that it really does. That blossoming comes from within the government. Because from that individual or group or department, you have the resources. You learn to budget the resources. So, and if it's not staff driven, then it's a very focused and dynamic group, volunteer group.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that the healthiest truly comes from staff because
mm-hmm.
they're directly connected to budget.
So you've shared with me that your personal vision and your ability to really listen for these great opportunities on specific landscapes
mm-hmm.
has come from your desire since childhood to be really in alignment with spirit.
Right.
And to be sort of directly co-creating.
Yes.
With, you know, that in that relationship.
Yeah.
And you never resonated really with your Catholic upbringing. I think
no.
as a lot of people have shared, as we evolve more and more.
Yeah, it's true.
And so how has that relationship allowed you to kind of bring your passion and vision, you know,
yeah.
forward in your professional life?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, you know, being raised Catholic, it was both odd and beautiful at the same time. There was the Catholic part of it, but then my parents were spiritual. So, you know, I was raised with a lot of prayer, you know, hearing. It was by osmosis that it was an understanding. But I knew early, like second grade, that it was not for me.
Mm-hmm.
And why do I have to go to confession when I can speak to God? They
directly.
Had a hard time with me.
Right. Don't need a middleman.
Don't need a middleman. But I always understood that I was always had this independent spirit, that I always had this most amazing imperative that I always listened to. And I was like, nope, that's not right. I need to follow this. And it's not my mental head. It's I really like to get out of my way and through prayer and meditation to be guided to that where, you know, where I'm meant to be. And it's interesting because sometimes, you know, we're in a situation, it's like, wow, I wouldn't have chosen this or even thought this was a possibility. But for the time, it's exactly where one is meant to be, where I'm meant to be. So, yeah. So I knew early that to listen, because I knew that it didn't feel right to me what I was being taught And so, yeah, and so I always had that strong spirit, and that just kind of created a strong foundation to listen. And I think when we listen, when I listen, things appear. Mm-hmm. And so it's through the eyes of, like, again, through the meditation and through prayer, is to have the eyes to recognize what's before me. Okay, and so that's huge, too. It's not only of wishing and seeking and desiring. It is what's presenting itself and trusting, right? It's not just me and my mental head in this world. I like to be guided in my life, and I always have been.
How do you feel, or how do you know when when something you feel directed to do or feel like you want to take some action on is aligned with your authentic self or aligned with spirit? Or are those both the same thing?
Yes. It's how I feel. If I feel happy about it, right? If there's a calmness with that. And I'm not saying that there's not growing pains. Yeah. Within a situation.
And self-doubt.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I'm like, wow. Okay. I was like, okay, no. So when there's a challenge, something like that, I thought, okay, let's look at the benefits. Where's the growth potential in this situation? So I know when something is right and I'm in alignment because it comes out of the blue. I could not have predicted that.
Hmm.
And, you know, it's always in alignment. And I've always found that in my life is that when I get out of my way, and, like, again, it's through that prayer and having a practice, learning to listen and to be guided and understanding the difference between the mental monkey mind and spirit. You know, practice makes permanent. Mm-hmm. It's such a beautiful line to toe. It's fluid, but yeah, it's that still small voice that one nurtures, and it's amazing how strong, you know, and the trust that grows from that. So I think it's through experience, and you learn to trust.
And you can always make a course correction, right? You know, when you go always. Down a, you take a certain, you know, path and realize, this actually doesn't feel aligned.
Yeah.
You can always, you know,
course
get
correct.
Back there, course correct, make little tweaks, right?
Absolutely. But you know what I like to do is I like to look for the learning. It's like, what am I meant?
Right.
Am I meant, because this came into my view, here's an opportunity. Am I meant to do this? And so I like to get out of the steering wheel and be like, okay, I'm going to try that. And let's see what comes from it.
My son is such a big help to me in this. He always says, Mom, you really can't go wrong.
Yeah.
It's true.
Try it, right?
You know, there'll either be something to learn or something to celebrate or, you know, there's always, you really can't go wrong.
And you know, one thing that really resonated with me recently is that either through reading or an interview, this is not only my journey or your journey that I am living my life, but sometimes others benefit, whether we even can conceivably even ponder that. So I'm living my life, doing my thing, but people do see us in in our world, our friends, family, whomever.
We're so influential.
But somebody's gaining from that. So it's not just me in my world in a challenge or, you know, it's like, okay, I can do this. But yeah, somebody's gleaning from it somewhere.
Yeah, when we allow ourselves to be guided, you know,
and vulnerable.
By as much as we can, you know, by our perception of the truth, then it's going to be a contribution.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Lisa. This has been great.
It's been wonderful.
And thanks, everyone, for listening today. If you have a question for Lisa or for me, join the Facebook page at The Inner Game. And we can continue things there. So until next time, spend some time deepening your connection to a piece of land you love.
Clouds are swift, rocks are ancient, mountains are high, oceans gray. Winds are restless, trees are patient, you, my child, are away.